Hello and welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast number 342, Pookie and his petty deja vu. On the way, Bolton beaten, Todd-tastic and Robins reliant. My name is Michael Bailey and joining us here this Monday afternoon at Archant Towers, we have Chief Norwich City correspondent Paddy Davitt and our Canaries colleague David Fraser. Gents, how you doing? All right.
That's what they call me.
Is it?
Yeah, very good. You struggle not to be on the back of 12 wins in 15, don't you?
Yes, you would really. I keep forgetting that I should refer to you as the metrosexual Alan Partridge. That is the best intro for you, Dave.
Is it? It's from a few years back, but it seems to still be hanging around.
Still rings true. Paddy, how are you? Are you well?
Oh, well, pal, yeah, very well. All good in the hood.
Enjoying your Sunday brunches?
Am I enjoying them?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm enjoying them. Hopefully people are, one or two more than people, plural, are watching them. That's the main thing. But it's all good. It's all good. As Dave says, it's a lot happier doing them now than if it was, dare I say, Ipswich's form line.
Oh, this is true. This is very true. Yeah, you can watch Paddy's Sunday brunches exclusively in full on the Pinken app. If you're not a football fan, download the app and then you get to have a nose in your house, Pad.
There is that as well. As long as you don't come to my house, that's the main thing.
I don't think it's got GPS on it, but we should probably check, shouldn't we, before we start getting some knocks at the door. Apologies, we haven't done a pod in the odd week. I think it's just been a quirk of logistical fate. Apologies, but here we go. You know, we're back here just in time for Christmas, so what more do you want? Before we get stuck into the proper stuff, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts, set our podcast agenda. Just send an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk, or you can get in touch on all the usual social media channels, be it our personal ones or, of course, those of the Pinken nature. And make sure you don't miss a single podcast through this season by subscribing. You can find all the details at pinken.com/podcast. So that was the week that was. I mean, admittedly, it's been a couple of weeks, but let's just focus on the last week, shall we? And Bolton, of course, Norwich City picking up, as you said, Dave, a 12th victory in 15 league games. They're on 43 points out of 21 games. They've won 13 out of 21 matches this season. I mean, it's kind of like reminiscent of when you cheat at a computer game and you're just, your team just keeps going and you're like, oh, I won again and you won again. And actually, I guess we probably all feel like the games just need to come and come and keep going and keep going, and then we can all achieve what we want to. But it's not quite that straightforward, is it, on the pitch? But still...
You mean Daniel Farke needs to up it from amateur to pro setting?
Yeah.
Get in the settings, Daniel. Yeah, I mean, and that 15, of course, two draws, one defeat. The only other one in there was the Bournemouth game, and they could have knocked out Premier League opposition that night, the amount of chances they had. So it really is a quite special time at the moment. You have got to enjoy it because you know they can't... Well, you wouldn't have thought that they can keep things going to this extent, but they did play well. You know, fair play to Bolton. They made this difficult by, you know, contrasting style, lumping the ball long and really piling on the pressure. But Norwich had played pretty well to get into a 2-0 lead, and they had to work really hard for it. So even though they did let it slip and it got back to 2-2, Daniel could still be pretty happy at the end with a 3-2 win, obviously with the dramatic style of it, which was just brilliant. But I think Daniel genuinely can let the negatives sort of flow away on this one.
There are so many facets to it on their pad, because as Dave said, Bolton did play well, and they probably looked in some ways better than the side they appear in the table, and they've clearly got a lot going on. Norwich just keep churning these things out, but they're relying on late winners at Carrow Road maybe all too often, and with some of the games coming up you start to wonder, well, but then they've actually done that against those sides earlier in the season as well, so it's quite hard to kind of fathom it all at the moment, I suppose.
Yeah, it certainly is, but ultimately, as you boys have picked out there, the results and the form are all in there, blowing in their direction, so you just hope they can roll on, irrespective of how the constituent bits of these games get pieced together. But I would say, we'll get into it maybe in a bit more depth, but I'd rather be playing the Forest, the Derby, a West Brom than a Rotherham, Millwall and a Bolton, because all the expectations on Norwich. You see Bolton, as you rightly said, tremendous issues going on in the background around reported unpaid wages to players, one win in 15. they just turned up there. There's no pressure on us, lads. You can almost hear Phil Parkinson. Go out, express yourselves, enjoy it. It's all for Norwich to get themselves into a winning position. And in that environment, they flourished. And it was the same with Millwall, and it was the same with Rotherham. So I'm less concerned that this Christmas swing, which people are now rightly probably saying could be pivotal in the overall final reckoning. I think Norwich will deal with that fine. I think it's those type of games. And if it is those type of games, the fact that they've come through those three with 9 points, that's all you need to know. They're finding a way.
It's such a funny contrast, isn't it? Because teams are obviously, as you say, cutting loose, feeling freer to go at Norwich because they're top of the league. Whereas last year, when Norwich were bang average, they'd just sit behind the ball and genuinely try and take something from the game that way. It's weird how that's played out, I suppose.
Yeah, the style is great to see. And the big thing for me for Saturday is that they managed to do that without Moritz Leitner and Tim Closer. And although Ben Godfrey did a decent job, still, for me, I'm still keen to see, as I saw you put in your six things, Michael, I'm still keen to see him more as a midfielder. But he did a pretty decent job considering he stepped into the team 15 minutes beforehand. But it did just highlight how important Closer's passing is from the back. You know, you've got a spine there, haven't you? You've got, you could probably even just about include Krull in that. Krull, Closer, Leitner, Stiefelman, Pukki. That's the supply line, really, isn't it? And then you've got some pretty decent players buzzing in and around that as well. So to keep this remarkable run going, you know, this is now the longest league unbeaten run under Daniel of 9 games. 5 home wins on the spin. That's the first time in 2 years they've done that. To keep all that going without arguably the most influential player in Leitner and not far behind in Closer, I think makes it even better.
Yeah, the strength of the squad is remarkable, and the way that they've got players just stepping in, and Norwich have ridden those out, haven't they, Pat? And is that fair play? Because I think I questioned Daniel's man management abilities almost last year, because there seemed to be a few issues, and just bringing the best out of players seemed a little bit short last year. So to have gone from that to just this whole collective effort is remarkable. No wonder they want collective responsibility in the boardroom and the corridors of power as well, because it's working so well on the pitch.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and we've touched on no better example of that through embodying one player is Marco Stiefelman. This time last year, didn't look anywhere near a player who could have come in and influence championship games regularly. Let's be brutally honest. Yeah. He still doesn't look like a player now if you watch him. He's fairly ungainly physique and gait, but he's an intelligent player. That's what he is. And he is making a difference, because it's not only his performance. I think Pukki's a far better player when he's got Stiefelman in and around him, because those two are on the same wavelength, quite clearly. And you know, that in essence is the point you're making, that last season it didn't feel like they had the pieces to put in the jigsaw in the way, but now everything is seamless. You know, Pukki gets injured, who comes in? Rhodes does the business. Hanley gets injured, who comes in? Zimmerman does the business. Godfrey, to an extent, take Dave's point, I don't think he was anything outstanding, but came in, did the business. Vrančić comes in for Leitner, does the business. That's all you can ask for as a head coach, that you have a group of players who, yes, there's key players who you wouldn't want to be with for any length of time, but as and when, because that's the nature of the championship, you're going to miss players through injury and suspension increasingly, that they have other options and come in and the performance level doesn't drop dramatically.
We should have run that poll, shouldn't we, at the start of the season? Who do you want to step into James Maddison as Norwich's number 10 next season? I wonder where Marco Stiefelman would have featured.
He would have literally got 0% votes. literally.
He would.
Yeah. I guess that there is this issue defensively. Norwich have conceded a fair few goals, and there maybe is a little uncertainty. I know that Tim Krul's come under a bit of criticism as well in recent games. So where do you see that at the moment, Dave? Obviously, hopefully Tim Close will be back in as well, but that wasn't so. And it's hard to pin exactly how much of that was on Saturday compared to Norwich just sort of going two up and almost switching off at the back. They just became sort of collectively erratic. And actually, some of the criticisms I made of Tim Krul during the game, probably a little bit harsh. I thought the save in the first half, actually, it was a well hit early shot that, you know, he still parried out quite a way out, I suppose. The goal, the equalising goal, was very messy, though, and given off the back of Rotherham and Millwall, there's just a few little bits there, aren't there, I suppose?
Yeah, that save in the first half, it was more difficult than the one against Rotherham. And I suppose he did at least get it a bit away from the goal, but you want to see it going to the side, don't you? And I'm sure that's what he's intending to do, because then it's away from trouble. But he survived that one, but that just sort of set off the nerves with him a little bit again from around the crowd, didn't they? He's not a huge issue, a huge problem. It's not like he's playing terribly, but I still don't think you're seeing a keeper. I still don't think we're seeing him fulfil the ability that we hope we probably would have seen by now. And the second goal, on closer inspection, yeah, he probably should have clasped that ball to his body and it shouldn't be getting away from him. But I think Zimmerman and Godfrey can probably take more of the blame for that, because he shouldn't have really been in that situation. But there was just panic at that point, wasn't there? Just all of a sudden, Bolton had the win behind them. And yeah, I'm sure Tim's really frustrated. I'm sure he thought he'd be playing better than he is by now. It just feels like you're still waiting for a big moment, you know, like a big sort of... Remember, pertinently, Bristol City away last year, Angus, that amazing save, you know. He'd also had that early run in the season when they had the five consecutive clean sheets, and Angus had big moments, didn't he, where people could point to them and say, oh, that's what Angus has done. And still with Tim, he's done a sound enough job. He's had a few wobbles, but there's not really much we can point to when you're like, oh, remember when Tim did that? Remember when how important Krul was that day? So presumably things can't keep going as well as they are. And if Norwich are going to get promoted, they are going to need Tim Krul to have some big days.
Yeah, it was and another wonderful performance at Stamford Bridge, wasn't there, in the FA Cup as well. I've got to be honest, it's a little hard not to compare, you know, in with Angus, because he was such a consistent, brilliant performer last year, that if you'd stuck Angus Gunn in this side, you'd almost just be saying away we go, but which is obviously perhaps not fair. But Daniel gave you a really good answer, didn't he, before the game on Saturday about Tim Krul's form, and it's not like anyone's not aware of what's going on and how it's been this year.
No, it was very honest. They've had very honest discussions, and Krul clearly, reading between the lines, is knows he should be doing better in those circumstances. We're thinking specifically the Swansea goal and the Rotherham goal. That said, Daniel did also go on to say that he'd much rather have a conversation with a player who hasn't made, quote, a few small mistakes when they've won the games, because then it's an easier mood and it's an easier atmosphere in which to have those discussions. But I take Dave's point entirely that they won't be capable of scoring two and three every game down the stretch. They'll be very tight games, and it will be a mistake that probably decides a game or two, and you hope it isn't a Tim Krul mistake, because there is that sort of discussion, conversation around him now, which stems really from, let's take it straight back to the West Brom gaffe. He was culpable for one of the Leeds goals, and just that lacking in air of assurance and confidence, not just through the rest of his players, but through the crowd as well, which, as you rightly say, to compare him with Angus, it's you know, it's probably an unfavourable comparison. But then again, Angus Gunn was as good as anything in the Championship last season, so maybe that's too high a bar. But I don't have any concerns about him at all, really. I think he's a very experienced man, and what maybe is on the negative part of the column, I think, is outweighed by what you get from, and it's not just what he's giving in terms of performance, but in terms of the dressing room, that experience. Been there, seen it, done it, played in the World Cup for his country, that could be invaluable when things do get a bit tense.
Excuse me. Just a couple more points. Bolton, I mean, we all kind of said, oh, early goal, then, you know, they'll knock them aside because they've had such a hellish week. Fair play to them, because they did show some remarkable character, regardless of the door being left slightly open by Norwich. They pushed against it and walked through. So let's see if they have more of that resolve. Obviously, Sammy Amiobi was a little bit silly, getting himself sent off, and that of course does also mean he'll be banned for the game at home to Leeds United this coming weekend, which is a shame, because he was probably Bolton's best player. And I'm sure they'd rather have him in than not, given that Bolton could do Norwich a favour next Saturday. The league picture, Dave, as you see it at the moment, in terms of... Well, I mean, Norwich and Leeds are clear, aren't they? So as things stand. And there's some big teams obviously behind them, but they're you know, a few paces behind them.
Yeah, I mean, to be 13 points clear of 8th place and 9 points clear of Forest in 7th, that's pretty decent, isn't it? No, I think most... Well, no, every Norwich fan would have bitten your hand off for the position they are in now. And we've seen this stat emerge, haven't we, that every team top after 21 games in the last 10 years has gone on to win promotion, or I think is it 7 out of those 10 won the title as well. So,
really?
So you know, there's a high bar set there. 6 points clear of Sheffield United and Derby as we head into a tough run of games. Bristol City away, Blackburn away, Forest and Derby at home. And more difficult ones to come once we arrive in January. So we're really going to find out whether they can last the course, I think, in these next month or two. But with the players who are coming back fit again and stuff, I think there's plenty of reason for optimism. And I think Pad sort of mentioned it a little bit earlier that you can go to Ashton Gate and you can go to Ewood Park at the moment without feeling too nervous. It's almost like away from home that you feel more confident because some of the brilliant results. But yeah, it's all came down to that man Pookie in the end, didn't it? And well, he even Daniel admitted it was one of his worst games, wasn't it?
He does have that knack of doing that. I'm sure we'll speak about Teemu in a moment. I think I worked out when Norwich got to 30 points, the point at which they did in the last 10 years, 68% of the teams had been promoted. When Norwich broke 40, which was after 20 games, I worked out that 93% of the teams had been promoted. So we'll see what it's like when we get to 50. It'll also be interesting which is the table at which it looks best for Norwich fans. And of course, I'm thinking about how far adrift Ipswich are at the bottom as well.
Well, that's lovely as well, of course. But to put this into context, the championship record points haul, 106 by Reading, wasn't it, in whatever year that was, 2004, 2005? If Norwich won the next two games and had 49 points at the halfway point and brought in another 49 points for the end of the season, they would still be 8 points short of what Reading achieved that year. However did they manage that?
I'll always bring it up. Reading lost their first game 2-0 at Fulham. They didn't lose again, but they, after the first game, Reading fans are probably going, oh no, what's this season going to be like? Record, that's what it was. Anyway, a little bit of news as well today that's just broken actually in the last hour or so. I think David Wright, under-23's coach, that has been confirmed. He's promoted from the under-18s. Of course, his former boss, Matty Gill, is off doing something or other. I can't remember what it is now, but I don't think it's going very well from what I heard. Norwich are now going to a point. Well, really, they've moved one bit of recruitment out for another bit because they've now got to go and find an under-18s boss. So there we go. And of course, the under-23s are playing Wolfsburg, aren't they, in midweek, Dave? In fact, we'll probably touch on that. Well, no, go on. It
is Thursday night, though, is at Carrow Road, yeah. Premier League International Cup. You saw the opening game, didn't you, Pad? Was it while I was in Tampa? Was that Bill Bow?
Yeah, they got a right chasing.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
We did the show, didn't we, before?
Yeah, was it free?
3-0, I think.
It could have been 33.
They had quite a bit of senior sort of experience, didn't they, Bill Bow? So,
which is a good point, thanks, Dave, because, Pad?
Oh, we might be seeing Mr. Kenny McLean. Yeah. Touch wood. That's what Daniel said to us on last Friday. Which is good news. Flowing into this debate we're having about squad and squad depth, you know, he was purchased, I think, very much in mind as a first 11 player, and unfortunately he got his injury, had it to undergo ankle surgery. I think we've not seen him since August in the League Cup, but subject to him coming through these, maybe you'd imagine he'll get a bit like Hanley, maybe a development game or two, and then for the turn for home he's going to be in the mix. So yeah, that'll be good to see. You're going down, aren't you, DF?
Yeah, I'm going down. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, Matt Jarvis is hoping to get some 23s soon as well, isn't he? And frankly, Dennis Shrebeni could do a proper game, couldn't he? I mean, what harm would it be in giving him an hour on Thursday night if he's going to be on the bench at Bristol City? He can manage that, can't he? We all know Rhodes is probably going to get off the bench before him. So yeah, you've got Jarvis there, you've got Pinto wanting game time, Hanley still
ben
needs
Marshall.
Game time,
Ben
Marshall, there's plenty of options. So I wonder whether we'll see a little bit of a change of approach, because you've also got in the mix here the FA Youth Cup starts at Port Vale Wednesday night, and as we saw on Saturday in the under-18s, the likes of Adam Ida, Sol Milovanovic, Jordan Thomas, Isaac Thorvaldsen, they were all with the 18s when they have been playing 23s. We've already had this report that Simon Power, Adam Phillips and another are likely to be going over to Holland with Dordrecht in January on loan. So I wonder whether a slightly different approach is coming here and they're just going to recalibrate a bit. So getting Wright appointed as permanently as the under-23s boss is probably the right move, isn't it? Get things settled down because the results haven't been good recently. And then, of course, we're all wondering who comes in as under-18s coach.
Do you want to take a punt?
Well, Mr. Holt is in the building, isn't he? Once a week at the moment. I would imagine he'd be very keen on it. He's got his qualifications. He's made little secret of wanting to be a manager. Of course, Neil Adams is still on the payroll, isn't he? Former FA Youth Cup winner. Alan Nielsen is a former player who played for Fulham and Birmingham, I think. He's David Wright's assistant. He may well want it. So there's a few names floating about, but under-18s, you know, it could be anyone really, couldn't it?
Right, let's move on to our gongs of the week then, shall we? Starting off, as always, with our big Duncan Forbes hero of the week. Who would you like to nominate for Dave?
Well, you can't look beyond Pookie, can you? Just because of the moment. I enjoyed it particularly because I missed the Millwall game. I was somewhere over the Atlantic at the time. So, yeah, to see that flying in the third minute of injury time, as we said in the app on after the game... We don't tend to celebrate Norwich goals with anything more than maybe a little quick punch of the air, but even that would be quite restrained from us guys, wouldn't it, in the press box, home or away. You don't get too carried away, but with this one, you had to, both fists in the air, you had to enjoy the moment, because it was something you remember, I think. If they end up getting promoted, then it will be one of those moments you think, you know, remember that winner against Bolton.
Was I the only one? I did think I stood up, which is very bad. Yeah. I think I slightly, yeah.
You're out of your seat a little.
Which is bad news because the poor Bolton commentator couldn't see, but more on him in a second.
It was the whole swing of it, wasn't it? Because it had gone for 2-0 and we'd all started writing away, you know, oh, Norwich stay top of the championship. Then bang, it's a draw and everything swings and then swings back the other way. So from our point of view, you do get that kind of adrenaline rush as a reporter, don't you? Because everything's changing and you've got to be so switched on in that moment to rewrite everything. It's quite a big moment when you do what we do, really, isn't it?
When I think someone on Twitter asked that they were hoping to see all of our rewrites,
yeah.
Which I don't think we keep them, do we? They just sort of get deleted in a fit of fury, pretty much.
Well, you say that, but yeah, it seems to be par for the course now, doesn't it? So yeah. There's no point in doing anything until about the 92nd minute, at the minute because it's more or less gets overtaken by events. So, I want it on record. Mine was one fist pump firmly seated, so there was, you know, there was no gamboling or, you know, trapeze artist going on in the press box at my angle anyway.
You sometimes get... club media staff, don't you, from the opposition, they'll get quite carried away because they're part of the club, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah, but Millwall was the one, yeah.
We're independent media, aren't we? So most of the time, you know, if Norwich did that at Wembley in the third minute of the playoff final, there's no way, doing what we do when you follow them day in, day out, that you're not going to get a bit excited. Even if, like Pat, you haven't grown up a Norwich fan, but it does dictate a lot of your... working and personal life to an extent, doesn't it? So you've got to enjoy the moment.
That's when you pull out a firmly seated fist pump. Your hero of the week, Pad?
Well, I mean, we won't repeat, but obviously he would be top of the shot, Mr. Pookie. But hero lowercase, Ben Godfrey, because that can't have been easy coming in 12 minutes before the game. Not played all season. You again probably think you're in the mindset, well, I'm going to walk to my bench seat and sit there for 90 minutes and then bang, you're into it, and facing a very direct Bolton team as well. And he will have known because he's not had an opportunity yet. These are few and far between, these audition moments for him. So, yeah, second, I agree with DF. I think him and Zimmerman, rather than Krull for me, were at fault for the second Bolton goal. But other than that, I thought he acquitted himself well, and given the circumstances, he would get the nod for me.
Say Tim Closer is out for Bristol City, would you start Grant Hanley
all day long?
I agree with that. I just wanted to nominate Emi Buendia, not so much for the week, but the fact that he was nominated Player of the Month, and he's freaking brilliant. I love him. Kevin Muscat, Villain of the Week. Well, there's a bloke on a national radio station who seems to have caused a bit of a stir today with his assertion that it would be bad news for the Premier League if Norwich got promoted, and Leeds for that matter, because of their foreign coaches.
Who said that?
Oh, we're not gonna name him. I just recall the fact that I once told him to chop chop at Stamford Bridge, which remains one of my proudest moments in life in general. So that's that one done. Basically, you guys, girls out there listening to us, you know, you don't need to worry about what's going on in various places elsewhere. Who was the other? Oh, yeah, so the Bolton commentator behind us, Bolton Radio. It's handy having these commentators behind us because they're effectively telling you what's happening while we're, because we have to look at our laptops, obviously, at some point because of the job we're doing and the nature of it. But it did rather get me that he was regularly recalling how Norwich were overplaying it at the back and that they were going to get caught out, which, you know, it's kind of the view we had at Carrow Road maybe last year, but I think we've all grown accustomed to the fact that Tim Krul will be asked to play the ball out and generally he can find someone to play it out to and won't get caught. Obviously it happens, but maybe if you parachuted in for an opposition side and you're seeing it, it's a bit more nerve-wracking than we are. And that's how I felt it. I did want to turn around and say, it's all right, that's just how Norwich play. But
yeah, I suppose the Norwich fans have seen that it works now, haven't they? So they are able to keep their cool and wait a little bit.
But I do fear that I'm talking this up and then the next time at Carrow Road, someone's going to go and tackle Tim Krul. But anyway, so other nominations for our villain of the week?
Well, I suppose that you could sort of look at it in the reverse way, couldn't you? Because it actually did Norwich a favour, but Sammy Amiobi getting his second yellow, getting the red card, it did contribute to Norwich finding the winner, but it was such a stupid thing to do. I mean, Cantwell wasn't even going to get the ball. There was a defender pretty close by who looked like he would deal with it. I don't know why he was wrestling with Cantwell in the first place. So thanks very much, Sammy.
Too true, and I doubt he'd have been Mr. Popular. Although I think David Kitson was trying on the EFL Gold show on Sky, was trying to suggest that where the ball fell for Timu in the 93rd minute is where Sammy would have been picking him up. And I'm like, no, I'm not sure that would have happened. I don't think.
Very prescient.
Yeah, I think that would have been pushing it a little bit. But anyway, Pad, you got villain of the week?
Well, it was going to be the Bolton commentator.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
sorry.
That's fine. That's basically why I was a one-fisted seated celebration, because he had annoyed me intensely because it was so one-eyed. You know, okay, as we are, you're tinted to one club or the other, but every challenge from Norwich was a foul and every challenge from Bolton was perfectly fair. So, he annoyed me intensely. Don't know his name or his organisation. Don't want to see him again for very much longer, but we will, and no doubt, when we go to Bolton. But in the absence of him, I'm going to say Russell Martin, and with my Cov hat on. Cov will 1-0 up, but going into the 90th minute, Walsall scored twice, get beat 2-1. Not happy. So, given Russell Martin's now at Walsall, and he's got a Norwich connection, he's going to be my villain of the week.
Oh, the poor Russ probably hoped moving on would mean he wouldn't be the villain of the week here very often, but there we go. Great stuff. Okay, well, Simeon Jackson, moment of the week is the last award. Obvious with Temu probably, but I did want to flag up Todd Cantwell because it gives us a chance to talk about him. I hadn't really twigged that his cross was very similar to the one that Max Aarons headed home against Rotherham, which is obviously a crucial goal, and he did it again. And for me, I know Marco probably was man of the match because he had such a profound effect on the game, but Todd in the first half, he was doing a lot of driving, and I'm sure that what he did against Rotherham has helped him probably find a consistency and a level. Obviously, I'm only judging that on one game, but just a new little level. And it's these are big moments for Todd, because I feel like he's now the one who's trying to establish himself, like Jamal and Max have both done.
And conversely, Godfrey isn't able to. Yeah, they're all on the same path. They're all basically talented lads who are trying to make it as first team regulars, and you would say certainly Jamal, certainly Max now are probably there as we sit here today. Ben Godfrey not had any opportunity really bar last Saturday, and Cantwell somewhere in the middle of that, because he's had an opportunity from the bench. Forrest springs to mind, he was good in a cameo there. He's had his chance to start a few games, and now, as you rightly say, the confidence that would have surged through him from what happened against Rotherham was evident for all to see there. I thought he was basically, you know, nominally, I wouldn't even say he was starting on the left, because more often than not he was playing down the middle. So he's clearly got that licence from Farker to do that, as Buendia has, to be fair, on the other side. But it was almost demanding the ball. You could see him. He was running in off the ball, third man runs, demanding senior players play him the ball. So, yeah, that is a young man full of confidence. He's got ability, and he just needs to live in the moment, as Farker is telling everybody to do, rather than get a bit too carried away, think he's arrived, think he's the best thing since sliced bread, and there's a player there, no doubt about it.
Which would probably lead me to talk about his the lowering of his socks.
Yeah, you're going to say that.
Because that on top of the hair, Just be careful, Todd. That's all I'm going to say. We can all see what Jack Grealish does every week. And yeah, anyway.
The time of worry is when he gets the tight shorts as well.
He's a bit of a Spice Boy, isn't he? He's a bit of a early days Beckham. And I quite like that, in that he's got a bit of character at least about him.
Hashtag TC36.
Exactly. And fair play to him. I said to you Saturday night, didn't I, Michael, that as a Norfolk boy, he's kind of living out most Norfolk boys' dream at the moment. The club that he's played for since he was 8 years old, born in Dereham, raised in Dereham as well. Everyone's known about his talent for a long, long time. And here he is contributing to Norwich, winning games, top of the table. He must be absolutely loving life, and fair play to him. You know, it is just the start of his journey, but we're all really enjoying it. And like you say, he's not really playing on the left. There's sort of a pattern to that front three, isn't there? Stieperman is actually the one who ends up out wide most of the time, isn't he? Despite nominally starting in the middle. And then they sort of shift around, don't they? And either Buendia or Cantwell hold the other positions. But Buendia was all over the shop Saturday. They could not follow him at all, and Cantwell likewise. So it is making it very difficult for opposition teams to prepare for the Norwich threat. And I think at the moment, given... I know Hernandez has had a hamstring injury, but I think it's a pretty decent debate there as to whether Todd starts on merit ahead of Hernandez now. And from the start of the season, there's no way you'd have said that, would you? So fair play to him. We've also got a contract issue in the background as well with Todd, that he's technically out in the summer, but the club have an option, don't they? So that's something which is going to need to be resolved one way or the other at some point. But yeah, it's great to just see the confidence flowing through him.
I've mentioned before, it strikes me as curious that Todd is the one of the young guns who hasn't signed an improved deal. And again, I spoke to Marco, I haven't actually used the quotes yet, but I spoke to Marco about him on Saturday, and Marco Stieperman, and he said, well, you know, we all do a good job of keeping his feet on the ground. If he gets too carried away, I think he might be one of those that needs a bit of that. But there we go. Right, it's time for some mailbag. This is where our discussion is led by your tweets, emails and other interaction. And we've got a bonus feature today, as discovered by Pad on the shelves on the way to the room we're in.
That's the level of homework that goes on to make this pod what it is.
Your level of homework. I'll at least script this thing, Pad. Football School, the amazing quiz book. Over 300 fan-tastic questions. It's a World Cup... Test your World Cup knowledge by Alex Bellos and Ben Littleton. So, Dave, give me a number between 1 and 168.
164.
Right, thanks for that. I have found the page numbers. What did you say, 164? So we might not know the answer to this, but the idea is at least you at home or on the tube or wherever you are can answer it. 164, 17 or 18, Pad?
17.
Here we go then, everyone. How did the Netherlands midfielder Nigel de Jong make his presence felt in the first half of the 2010 World Cup final against Spain?
We know it.
You know it?
Yeah. Do we want to say it? Or not?
He karate kicked somebody in the chest, didn't he?
Howard Webb sent him off.
Yeah.
No, he didn't send him off. He did send him off.
I can't remember.
I'm
trying to think. There's a multiple choice pad element, you'll be glad to know. A, he scored an own goal.
No.
B, he tripped up Spain coach Vicente del Bosque when chasing a ball. C, he kicked opponent Javi Alonso in the chest. D, he threw the referee's whistle into the crowd. So, I don't think he did get sent off, did he?
Yeah, that was the fuss, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, there you go. Javi Alonso.
So, we'll keep you guessing with the answer until the end. And we'll look that up. There we go. Well, that's going to be a very successful feature for future podcasts. I'm sure you'll all be looking forward to that. Fortunately, you've also sent us some tweets. So time is pressing, as it does tend to be the case. So we'll rattle through them relatively quickly. But thank you for all getting in touch. Basically, we'll put out a tweet beforehand and just send us what you want us to ask, and we'll ask the guys. So let's go. There's not many of them, so it's all good. Shouldn't say that.
there's loads
of them. How will we get through them all? Right, Spencer Long. Thank you for the message, Spencer. Do you think we will see Felix Paslak play a league game at all? Will he even stay here? I guess there is a question over January. What do you reckon, boys?
If Max were to get injured, yes. I think he's off the rank ahead of Ivo Pinto now. I don't think we'll see Ivo Pinto play much, if at all, for Norwich. So other than that, no, Max is your man. Although he may well be used as cover for Jamal as well, frankly, because I think the way Daniel approaches these things is that he sees fullback should be pretty interchangeable, doesn't he?
Yeah, sounds fairly sound logic. I'd go with that. Yeah, it's looking... well, I thought there was a telling line. I can't quite remember when recently, but and whether it was Weber or Farker, but one of them was talking about fringe players. They'd look to move on in January. I think Evo probably falls into that category. Ideally, if you could get some money for him, but that might be a bit ambitious now. But he's not going to feature here as long as Max Ahrens is at the club. So he's out of contract in next summer. Can talk to interested parties in January. Not quite to the scale of an Oliveira, but he needs to go and play games and get his career going. So, yeah, for that reason, I think Pasalic will remain in the building.
They probably need that bargaining chip with Dortmund, won't they? Because ultimately Dortmund might look at it and go, well, he's not playing. So it'll be an interesting line how they see it all. Good stuff. So, I see buying NFK. Great name. It rolls off the tongue. If you could make one asterisk realistic January signing, be it permanent on loan, who would it be? Or to play it in what position and their identikit. Don't know what that means, but who would you sign if you could, realistically?
Difficult straight off the bat to think of that, but I'm in a position to be left back all day long, because as was proven when Jamal Lewis was touch and go, I think it was Sheffield Wednesday away, the options didn't fill you with a lot of confidence. So who... I think it's more like you're looking at Premier League loan type arrangements. So if there's a one or two Harry Wilsons knocking about who aren't out in the Championship, then you'd like to take one or two of them, wouldn't you? That ilk of player, I'd have to go away and think about an actual player off the top of my head, but in terms of the type of player, I think they'd be looking, because there's no point in bringing, as we've discussed at length here, bringing somebody in just to thicken out a squad, because that squad is plenty thick as it is. It'd have to be somebody who can actually affect what they're doing, i.e. somebody who's as good as or better than what they've got. And I don't think there's too many of them players about at the minute who are available in Jan.
Yeah, I mean, a left back would probably be the only one that I'd really be looking at. I'm afraid I haven't got a name off the top of my head, but yeah, you maybe look at somebody that was around the fringes on... of a Premier League squad who can play left back. James Husband clearly is supposed to return in January, but I'd imagine he'll end up going back to Fleetwood for the rest of the season unless somebody else wants him. But other than that, I have seen the name Kingsley Schindler has popped up a little bit in Germany in recent weeks again, who's somebody we have talked about in the past, isn't he? Who's a right winger, and I think he's out of contract at the end of the season at whichever club he is with. I can't remember.
Holsten Kiel.
That's it, yeah. Who are decent in the second tier, aren't they? So he's probably one that is on a list somewhere at Norwich, but do you need a right winger right now? Probably not. So, yeah, January at the moment is becoming a little bit of a misnomer, isn't it?
Well, don't say that, Dave. We've got loads of coverage planned. Toby Gallant, finally. Vinnie Mansi does ask a question, but I can't read it. It's something about radio and national radio and some weird animal with antlers. I don't know what he's talking about. Are they antlers? Don't worry, Dave. Toby Gallant, do you think the East Anglian sandwich of the Championship table is appetising? And what would you combo with it for the perfect lunch? Dave, I think this is a question for you.
Oh my word!
That is 22 club filling sandwich.
I tell you, it's reminiscent of the carrot cake you had at the friendly. Is it the Friendly Farmer or Jolly Farmer? I always get it muddled up.
Luton pre-season. Of cake.
This is dangerous talking about food, but the carrot cake you had at the services the icing was at the same ratio as the cake.
And not enough filling on that one, I'm afraid.
It actually fell off, didn't it? And you literally had two cakes, one of icing and one of actual cake. Yeah. Anyway,
at the moment, I think I'd have to put a Friends reference in there, and you'd need a moist maker, as Monica used to put in Ross's Thanksgiving sandwich, the moist maker, which is a bit of bread soaked in gravy, wasn't it? And there's that one episode of Friends where Ross gets very angry because someone eats his sandwich. So it's got to be what? Ipswich got 11 points, Norwich nearly on 44 now, so it needs to be nearly four times as big as Ipswich. So you've got a fair bit of filling to squeeze into there. So let's get some turkey, let's get some stuffing, cranberry, all those festive things in there. But it certainly will taste nice.
Well, I'm glad we asked that question. I have important opinions on the ratio between millionaire shortbread, but the rest is sort of over my head. It's all gone a bit Kings of Anglia, hasn't it, for a second? But we can throw that in because it's banter, so it's fine. Brilliant. So, as always, get your messages, questions in over the week and whenever. You can do that on social media for the podcast or your nominations for the awards, of course. And you can email us, thepinken@archant.co.uk. Right, the week ahead is Bristol City. It's a long old poke. It's a 5:30 kickoff. It's on Sky Sports. It's going to be a long old trek, isn't it, Pad?
Yeah, no two ways about it. But we've had two home games, so let's not get too greedy. Yeah. In terms of how did they do DF Saturday?
They've been in good form, I've noticed, actually. Yeah, yeah. I think, are they 13th at the moment? We don't put numbers next to the table.
13th, yeah. 13th on 29 points. So they are 7 points adrift of the top six.
Is Marley
Not 100%. Let me just see if I can find the result. I might have to look on my phone.
Go on then, Dave. You look at
the phone. I think they went 1-0 away. But
At Birmingham. They won at Birmingham.
Saturday. Well, that's a pretty impressive result because they've been going quite well, haven't they?
I mean, I think Birmingham should have won it about 3 or 4-1. But, they routed. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I was convinced Ipswich were going to beat them when Birmingham.
I was just going to make that point. I did my one and only foray into the red button on Sky was the Ipswich-Bristol game last midweek or the midweek before. And obviously Ipswich were diabolical defensively, but I wasn't overly impressed with Bristol, I've got to be honest. So I don't think that holds any fit of this next tranche of games. Famous last words, I think that's the one you would least be concerned about.
Marley Watkins came on for the final 10 minutes.
He's used to that.
He is. I think they... isn't Corey Smith out injured long term, I seem to remember. I don't follow them, but I don't think he's been involved for quite a while. They've still got decent players, but they lost some of their key men, didn't they? Of course, Bobby Grant went to Cardiff. Sam Byron?
Yeah, he's at Borough. Aidan Flynn. Yeah.
So that was a lot for them to recover from.
Did you say Joe Bryan? Did you? Joe Bryan, the left back, very good player. I think he's in the Premier League now.
So I like what Johnson's trying to do there, but I just I don't think they're going to sort of get rid of him anytime soon because he's quite a popular figure around there, isn't he? And we went there last season and it's a great setup, isn't it? It is going to be a Premier League stadium at one point. That's a brilliant press box as well, isn't it? That's one thing to look forward to on Saturday.
The Clifton suspension bridge from it, can't
the view is absolutely spot on, isn't it? Right at the front of the stand. So they are a big setup, but it feels like maybe this season is their transition season. So it's one that I would be more confident Norwich can win this year than last year, and of course they did win last year. So
it's a very interesting one there, because is it Steve Lansdowne, the owner, isn't it? I think Lee Johnson is seen as his sort of blue-eyed boy, for want of a different expression. So, because 2 years ago, both managers were basically getting called out for getting sacked in the morning, weren't they? When it was 1-1, Alec Neil went, and Lee Johnson had been on a worst run that season and was getting absolute pelters.
But wasn't that the game his assistant left? Half an hour before the game, they announced
scapegoat.
Collateral damage. Yeah. So
And Yannick scored, didn't he?
He did.
That was a decent goal as well, wasn't it?
Indeed. So, we'll see what Bristol City holds in store. As I said, it's a 5:30 kickoff. We'll be there, of course, beforehand with all the team news and live coverage and all that sort of stuff. We've already said what's coming up with the under-23s, haven't we? So that's all good. And good luck to the under-18s as well. I think they've got their FA Youth Cup tie coming up soon.
Wednesday.
Thank you, Dave. Good. I'm glad one of us knows. And I just... struck me, having written off Stoke's promotion hopes when they beat Norwich here, they're now only 2 points behind Aston Villa in 10th place. Ridiculous. Championship, ridiculous table. You sort of forget how ridiculous it is when you're sat at the top, which of course we hope continues indefinitely. Right, I think we're pretty much done. As I said, live coverage over at pinken.com of the Bristol City games. Keep an eye on that. And the Pinken Show will be live with you this Wednesday, so join us as well. 6 o'clock, that is now live, but of course you can watch it any point after that event or get involved at the time. Dave, any other business?
No.
Thanks, Pad.
Dave says no, then it's no.
That's exactly right. Brilliant. We are done then. Thanks to all of you for listening. It's goodbye to Pad. Thanks very much.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Dave.
Cheers.
Remember pinken.com for all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion, and other stories and transfers and what have you. We'll be back next Monday. hopefully. So make sure you get in touch, get involved. Remember, this is your podcast as much as it is ours. Until then, enjoy yourselves, and here's to some success at the Robins. Am I going to have to edit that out now?
Possibly.
Bye.
'Well, it would have been Nigel Dion.
Oh, this is... Why haven't they got the page names for this? 17C? Yeah, Heroes and Villains?
The Karate King.
Did he get sent off or not, is the question.
We don't know, stupid book. We'll bring it back next week.